Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. A new book ties together the letters between Private John Warnes and his family and friends and the events of World War I. From Wentworth to the Western Front, the World War I Odyssey of Private John Warnes provides rare insight into the people and the mood of Southeast South Dakota more than 100 years ago. The book's author is Rich Loftus. He's professor of history at Mount Marty College in Yankton. He meets the public during a book signing this Saturday at Zambros Variety in downtown Sioux Falls. You can stop by between 2 and 4 p.m. He visited with SDPB Steve Zwemke last week to explain how he learned of John Warnes and how this project began.
It all started when a student left a shoebox full of World War I era letters on my desk. That led me to write a story about Edward Harris, who was a World War I soldier from Armour, South Dakota. And that came out in 2002 in South Dakota History. The Warnes family read that story. They contacted the State Historical Society, and then the Historical Society contacted me. And I went to Aberdeen, South Dakota, to meet Marvin, the son, and Leona, the daughter-in-law of Private John Warnes. And they had a big decision to make that day because all of the correspondence was topped off with a note from Private Warnes that said private, not for public viewing. But he had died in 1952, and now it was like 2003. So they decided that all the stuff had been preserved for a reason, and part of that would be to tell the story. And so I was very fortunate that they decided to let me have the opportunity to tell the story.
Yeah. We're going to learn more about John Warnes and his family as we move along here. You talked about receiving a box of information from one of your students. Once you began research and work on the John Warnes story, did you also have some students work with you on that?
Yeah, I did. There were several times when I had students help me go through the letters. And it's not always easy to read handwriting and, you know, more than one person looking at it is always helpful. So there were students that helped me type up the letters and put them in the Word format so I could build them into the story. And there were students who sat with me and read some of the letters so we could decipher what exactly they were saying. And one particular in 2014 was Michaela Ram, who was a sophomore at the time. And she and I worked on integrating 27 new letters into the story that eventually became the book that we have now.
You hit the road quite a bit to meet with the Warnes family during the process, getting more information all the time. I'm curious, were you able to use the World War I Museum's Research Center in Kansas City to find out anything about John Warnes during his time in Europe? And I'm also curious if you maybe traveled abroad to learn more about John Warnes for this project.
I've never used any resources from the World War I Museum. I've been there, and I provided them with a copy of the story. Mm-hmm. And I would really like to have a chance to present the story at the museum. But I had, you know, more than enough to go on from the material that the family provided me. So I never used them for research. As far as traveling, I haven't really been to the World War I sites that he mentions in the book other than Paris. Mm-hmm. And that's something I'd like to do sometime is I like to visit the same villages that he visited and, you know, photograph them and get a feel for that and, you know, include them in the presentation that I make when I travel.
Yeah. I read a lot on World War I history, but this is a book that focuses on a part of South Dakota, its people, and their thoughts during this era. And you just don't see a lot of writing or collections that center on a place so close to home, places like Wentworth, Madison, Rutland. And it's so interesting to read about the culture and the mood of these people, as so many of them were from Germany, yet young men like John Warnes went to fight against the Kaiser. There was a lot of conflict, wasn't there?
Yeah, there really was. And when you think about this family, you know, they spoke German at home part of the time. They worshipped in German when they went to church. So when the war started in 1914, they would naturally have been inclined to support Germany and hoping that Germany would win the war. And then as the years went by, you know, the American attitudes towards Germany began to deteriorate after things like the Lusitania in May of 1915. Mm-hmm. And eventually we go to war. And what the letters show is on the home front as well as on the war front, you know, the Warren's family switched over to the propaganda that the Germans were the Huns. So both his sister Anna and John himself used that term to refer to the Germans. And in towns like Wentworth, they kept track of who was buying bonds. If you didn't buy one and your name then didn't appear on the front page of the newspaper, eventually you might wake up in your barn, you might be painted yellow or something like that. So there was a lot of pressure to support the war. So this family goes from being really connected to Germany, speaking in German at home, calling the Germans Huns during World War One. And then I think one of the remarkable parts of the story is in the end, 30 years after the war, John has stayed in touch with the family in Germany. And in 1948, they tell him that they don't have enough food to eat. And so on several occasions, he boxed up food and he sent that food to this German family. So he went, you know, back to the view that the Germans were people just like us. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the odyssey that he goes through.
Yeah. We just started to talk about the Warren's family, John and his sister Anna. And it's the correspondences between John and his family, his friends, and members of the Wentworth community that tie your book together with the events of World War One. John mentions getting an Argus leader from time to time when he was overseas. How long would it take a letter or a newspaper to get to John Warren's, and how long for his to get back to Wentworth?
I think by this time, it took several weeks to make, maybe like a week, for a ship to make the transatlantic voyage. And so I think it might have been like a month between the time something was written and the time it was received.
Wow. And I believe the first correspondence you include is one of John Warren's friend, Gil, and one of his statements stuck with me throughout your book, and that's, quoting, "I am inclined to think that Sherman slandered hell when he compared it to war. That, along with the story of Archduke Ferdinand's assassination, makes a powerful opening chapter."
Well, I think it does, too. That letter from Gil was 18 pages long, and it was handwritten and single-spaced. And he goes into great detail what it was like to go to Germany and fight for the Germans on the Western Front. And he did that because he had an uncle who was an officer in the German military. And so he's writing to John this long letter explaining why John hasn't heard from him for a long time. And it's because he had gone to Europe to fight with the Germans. And it's a pretty graphic letter, and it gives a kind of a preview of some of the horrific things that were going to happen in World War One.
Our guest is Dr. Rich Loftus, professor of history at Mount Marty College in Yankton. This is really an easy read, as you've done a nice job of interspersing these correspondences with details of what was happening during World War One. I think we can leave a lot of war details to the reader, but I'd like you to talk about the significance of the 89th Division, of which John was a part, and their contribution to the German retreat.
So the Americans were involved in the two major offensives that brought the war to an end. And the 89th Division played pretty much a major role in each of those two. John was trained with other members of the 89th Division at Camp Funston in Kansas, and they were known as the Midwesterns, or as Wood's Division, because they were trained by Leonard Wood. And so in the book, I do get into some military history that shows exactly what the 89th Division is doing during those last two major offensives that brought the war to an end. And one of the things that people don't realize is that the war had been going on since 1914. There are American soldiers who appear in Europe in 1917, but the majority of American soldiers arrived in 1918. And once they got on the front in, you know, the midsummer of 1918. The war was over by November. So they played a key role in bringing the war to an end. And it probably ended sooner because Americans were involved.
John was really impressed with Leonard Wood, too. Of course, he has the fort named after him in Missouri, where a lot of our soldiers go to boot camp. But he had some nice things to say about him, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Let's move on to another correspondence here, and I'd like to read this. It's a letter from John Warren's pastor. I believe Oberhugh was the last name. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, you call it a theological perspective on war. And here's what Pastor Oberhugh had written to John Warren's. When the country calls the Christian to the colors, he does respond, not for the sake of adventure or to wreak personal vengeance upon the enemy. For God says, "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourself, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, said the Lord." But a Christian follows the flag in obedience of God, who sends the soldiers into the field by the ordained and constituted governmental powers for the punishment of the evildoers. Though he shoots and wounds and kills, he is by no means a murderer, but a part of the government itself, which beareth not the sword in vain, but is a minister of God. So we see that a Christian can be a soldier with a clear and good conscience before God. Is that something that John had been wrestling with? And also, is that a good message for military personnel today? Does that hold up 100 years later?
I'm not sure that John really wrestled with that problem. My interpretation of the whole situation would be that his pastor just wanted to reassure him as he went off to war that in Christian theology, there's a view of the just war, that there are some wars which are just, that are being fought for a cause that is righteous. And if that is the case, then Christians can go to war and even be involved in combat and killing the enemy, but they are not to be considered guilty of committing murder because they're fighting in a righteous cause. So that's the way the Christian church had developed an understanding that allowed Christians to go to war, and that goes back to the early church fathers and the just war theory.
Yeah, that along with the letter from John's friend Gil are two letters that really stuck out to me as I read your book. What about you? Is there a letter or maybe two that really stands out for you as you were writing this?
Yeah, there's several letters that always come to my mind as being favorites. One of them is from June of 1918, and it's written by his sister, Anna. She's like 19 at the time. And she's been to Madison to see a movie, and movies were, you know, a brand new form of entertainment in 1918. And it's a propaganda film. It was called Over the Top. Mm-hmm. And in the letter, you can tell that the propaganda efforts of the American government, Wilson and the Committee of Public Information and all that, has reached rural South Dakota because she's completely enthralled by the movie. And her friend who went to the movie with her said that if she would have had a gun, she would have shot at the screen. And in that letter, Anna refers to the Germans as Huns. So I think that's a remarkable letter because, you know, there was this monolithic attempt by the Wilson administration to create conformity, and dissent regarding the war was not going to be tolerated. Wilson's view is basically once you go to war, the Bill of Rights goes on the back burner and everybody's got to be on board. And then there's another letter from Anna that she writes on Christmas Day in 1918. It's a very poignant letter. You can tell that there was a very deep bond between those two. And she's describing what it was like to not have him at home for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And she goes through some of the gifts that they got. And then she says that the program was all in American. I think it's interesting that she doesn't use English. She says American. So when they went to church for the Christmas program, you know, it was in English. So the German language services were over. And she also makes reference to the flu epidemic, which was so bad at that time that a lot of public meetings and schools were closed, and people were just told to stay home to avoid spreading the flu. So those are two of my favorite letters. And I also really like John's letter that he writes to his mother on Christmas Day in 1919 when he's in Paris on his way home.
You know, and those are three letters as well that I would list as, you used the word poignant, and that's a perfect description because they are letters that really stand out in your book. Is this your first book, Rich?
It is. I've, you know, written some articles on World War I soldiers before, but this is the first attempt to put a book together.
What did you learn as a new author?
I guess I learned that you just have to stick with it. You know, this is not a really long book altogether with all the notes and everything. It's only like 120 pages. But you just have to have a goal in mind. And I always tried to get the opinions of other people. I'd have other people read. And I used the story a lot in my teaching. And going out to communities around South Dakota through the South Dakota Humanities Speakers Bureau and presenting this program, that kind of kept my interest in this project. And I really wanted to get it into a book form because two of Private John Warren's daughters are still alive,
mm-hmm.
and they live in California. They're in their 80s. I wanted them to see the book. And then I'm also in really close contact with two of his granddaughters. They both attended the book signing, and you know, neither one of them ever had a chance to meet Private Warren's because he died before they were born. So there was a lot of motivation to get this done.
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to read the book in full before we were able to visit here. The holidays are a great time for book purchases, and you have a signing coming up at Zandvoort's Variety in Sioux Falls. Can you give us the details on that?
Yes, that's going to be on Saturday, December 8th from 2 to 4 at Zandvoort's Variety. And I'll have copies there that I can sell and sign. So for any listeners in the Sioux Falls area, that'd be a great time for you to come out and meet me and take a look at the book. It's also available on Barnes & Noble's and Amazon online, and it's for sale, of course, at Zandvoort's Variety as well.
All right, that's good to know. Again, Dr. Rich Loftus has been our guest, professor of history at Mount Marty College in Yankton, and the book is From Wentworth to the Western Front, The World War I Odyssey of Private John Warren. Mr. Loftus, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.